League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The 80s was a decade that saw the brilliant flowering of a daily tragicomedy in Soho, enacted in pubs like the Coach and Horses or the French, and in drinking clubs like the Colony Room. These were places of constant conversation and regular rows fueled by alcohol. It's the subject of a new and brilliant book, Soho in the 80s, by Christopher House. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from London itself, Christopher himself. Good morning to you, sir.
Thank you for those kind words. It was a very strange era.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. We were just talking off air because I was rattling around Soho a little bit, but nothing like these gentlemen. Describe the Soho of the 80s, because it's a different animal to what it is today.
There were lots of different Sohos in the 80s, but the one that I was tuned into was the one with conversation pubs, I think you could call them. Pubs where you could go and know that you were going to have interesting people to talk to. And, of course, that sometimes turned into flaming rows. The Coach and Horses was a famous one where Norman Balon was called by Geoffrey Bernard, the columnist, London's rudest landlord. I remember when I first went there, I just got my pint of beer and sat down and tasted it. And it tasted a bit funny. And I said to the man behind the bar, "Excuse me, there seems to be something odd about this beer." And he said, "If you don't like it, you can F off. Here's your 73p. So I got my 73p back, and I did go away then, but I came back, and I suppose, in a way, it changed my life.
And, I mean, the cast of characters was quite something. We had writers, you had actors, you had librarians. I mean, it really was a cross-section in a very small area.
Well, the thing is, you had famous people like Francis Bacon, or John Hurt, the actor, who like drinking a great deal, but you also had people completely unknown to the world. People like Mick Tobin, an old friend of mine, who was a stage carpenter. He gave Geoffrey Bernard his first break in a show called Espresso Bongo on tour. And Mick had that gift of getting on with everybody. He knew Maria Callas and called her Callie, and he knew Lucian Freud, whom he called Lou. And in fact, Lucian Freud painted a portrait of him. It's called Man with a Check Cap. And it's now, of course, in somebody's very expensive collection. But Mick was just slopping around, and he got on very well with the rest of us.
And I mean, how did anybody get any work done then if they were all carousing? Because the carousing was quite something, and there were, you know, there were dramas on a daily basis.
Well, that's true. It was very funny. It seemed funny at the time. It was like a situation comedy with a huge cast of characters. And you knew the backstory to everybody. So when something happened, it really hit home. It's interesting what you say about people getting work done, because they certainly did. I suppose Francis Bacon got up very early in the morning and painted his horrible pictures and then came into the Colony Room Club in the afternoon or on bank holidays and would buy champagne for everybody, and he would get completely spifflicated. But by then, he'd already covered his canvas, so that was a good start.
The most famous one, of course, was anybody who used to read The Standard at the time, would that column used to say, "Geoffrey Bernard is unwell."
Well, yeah, Geoffrey Bernard had a weekly column in The Spectator, and he really, he was his own Boswell, if you like. He was his own biographer. It was one side of his life, and he was quite regular, except that sometimes he was unwell. People thought it meant he was drunk. It didn't mean that. It meant something much worse. He had diabetes, and eventually he had a leg amputated. Really, he sacrificed his whole life to this, in a way, rather absurd way of life of drinking and being in the pub.
But Peter O'Toole, another Soho resident, managed to turn this into a rather successful one-man stage play.
It was a very good play, yes, practically one man, and it ran in the West End for a good time at the end of the 80s and then 10 years later, and Peter O'Toole was just made for the part. He, I think, wanted to be a bit like Geoffrey Bernard. He wanted to be a womanizer and a carouser and break off all the shackles of convention. But he knew that if he was going to be a good actor, he couldn't do all that. And again, Jeffrey wanted to be rather like Peter O'Toole. He wanted to be tall and handsome and suave, and he couldn't quite manage that. So they were sort of made for each other. They completed each other's worst halves.
And I suppose one of the things, if you want to spend time drinking and you've got some time to kill, then sort of journalists and actors are the two people who tend to have an awful lot of free time. And there are an awful lot of actors rattling around Soho. You mentioned John Hurt, who was well known. Tom Baker was another one. And Harris, yes. Richard Harris, were often to be spotted in the Coach and Horses.
Well, Tom Baker used to come in after having done voiceovers very often, and he was he seemed a very steady character to me. I know that some of the things he wrote about himself, he painted himself as a rackety lover of good things in life, drink and women and so on, which is true, but he was very reliable, so he would do his early morning voiceovers and then come into the pub, Coach probably, most of all, or perhaps the French pub in Dean Street. But he knew he'd always find somebody there to talk to, and he was pretty good at talking himself, as he still is.
And what was, I mean, one of the things that's happened in Soho recently is it's become gentrified, and there was, I was just saying, I mean, I was working in the mid-80s, I was working in Rupert Street.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and you just down from the Blue Posts. So there was a definite village sort of feel to Soho in those days, which I haven't been back for a while, but apparently it's now become gentrified, and that's all kind of gone. And talking of gone, it sounds like my guest has gone as well. I will try to get him back on the line after this. And we go back to, I just said the magic word gone, and we'd lost Christopher House. I
was saying, we've got him back again.
We've got him back again by the power of Soho in the 80s. Just saying that Soho now has you know, it was a very much a village atmosphere, and you could, you know, and that's gone now.
I tell you what I miss. I miss all the little shops, like butcher's shops. There used to be one down Brewer Street, which was called Slater, Cook, Bisney and Jones, and it was nicknamed the Solicitors. And there used to be Fens near Walker's Court, where you could get grouse if you wanted to. My favourite was Port Wines, just at Seven Dials, and his family had been in business there for 200 years. All these have gone. There's no butcher shops at all left in Soho.
And I suppose the other thing is the fact that not only has that gone, but the characters, a lot of them have literally died off. And that culture, because I remember, the long lunch, the walking into a newsroom and seeing that strata of cigarette smoke at about 4 foot off the desk, etc.
And there's no smoke in our offices now. And everybody eats sandwiches at their keyboard. Yeah. I'm sure it can't be good for them, or indeed for anybody else. It's funny, isn't it? People did drink a great deal, and they were quite tolerant of each other then, apart from the fact that rows used to break out regularly.
But, I mean, I remember going, you know, you used to go off for sort of a press lunch or something and end up in Quo Vadis, and you'd start at sort of midday and not get back until probably 7 o'clock that night.
Well, what people forget is that the pubs closed in the afternoons in the 80s, and that's why you had these strange things, drinking clubs. Not only the Colony Room Club, there was also a place called the Kismet, which was really a hole, underground. And it had two nicknames. One of them was Death in the Afternoon, and the other one was the Iron Lung, which I think just says it all. Somebody once said, what's the funny smell in here? To which the answer was failure.
Oh, absolutely. That's good. Why did you decide
that? Yes, all my friends are dead now, apart from Norman Balon, the famous landlord of the Coach and Horses, who's now 91.
Blimey, I had no idea he was still alive and kicking, but
he's kicking as much as you want to be kicked.
Is the Coach and Horses then still going as a working pub, then, or has it become some sort of trendy wine bar?
No, thank heavens, it's still a pub. I was there yesterday, and they are still selling pints of bitter, so...
There is hope for us all yet.
I see that.
I
hope so.
What inspired you, then, to put this all down for the greater good of mankind and for those of us who were around about at the time?
It's because that era has gone, isn't it? It's a piece of history, and I noticed that people were getting things wrong. They were getting the wrong flavour about it. So I thought, well, I'll see what I can put down. And at first, nothing came because I'm afraid I forgot a lot of what I was doing in the 80s. But then luckily I found some yellowing old notebooks. And by the time I'd written those up, it all made into a picture. It sort of built itself into a mosaic. And it's extraordinary. people can't quite believe it, and yet it seemed everyday life to us then.
Indeed. I just can't let you go without talking about Graham Mason.
Yes, my old friend Graham Mason. He was a great man. He was known as the drunkest man in the Coach and Horses, which takes some doing. And he had an unfortunate habit when strangers came into the pub. He would turn round from his bar stool and say, "Who the are you?" And on one occasion, the response to this was somebody to give him a great blow on the head, so he fell off his stool, and he pulled himself up off the floor with his limbs sprawling all over the place and said, "Don't you ever do that again." Which I thought was very brave.
And is it true that you once complained about the noise that snowflakes were making falling on his scalp?
Yes, that's right, because he was losing his hair, as I have, and he came into the pub one day blue in the face, and that was his complaint, the terrible noise of the snow falling on him.
Well, it was indeed a period of time that you've captured quite brilliant. The book is called Soho in the 80s. It's by Christopher Howes. It's out now with Bloomsbury, I believe. Christopher, if people want to find out more about you or buy the book, is there a website? Is there social media? Can they follow you? Do you tweet?
Oh, I tweet like mad, yes, and I'm Beardy Howes on Twitter, and if you just type in Soho in the 80s, it all pops up.
Christopher, only one question, and thanks for talking to me today. If you had the opportunity to get in a time machine, would you go back for an afternoon in the chaos and the colony?
Not only that, I'd take somebody with me, somebody from the HR department from somewhere who's solemn, and I hope they might learn a thing or two.
Wonderful. The book is called Soho in the 80s. It's by Christopher Howes. Christopher, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.